Tama Pōtaka kindly with us this morning. He's the Minister of Māori Development and also the Minister of Conservation, Tarawhiti, and also he's the Minister for Whānau Water. So there's a few interesting kaupapa on the table with Tama. Thank you for being on our program again, Tama. Tēnā koe.
Ngā mihi ki a koe. Te taku manu kāre ārea, Dale, me te whānau.
Kia ora te wāti koe. Gee, well, there's been a heady time, a rush, nervousness in tau Māori communities. I want to have a look too at some of your goals, maybe even unlocking land blocks, Māori, that have been predominantly inaccessible. But can we touch on the fast-track consenting process? Because you're the Minister of Conservation as well, and there are many who are very concerned that democracy is being compromised by the ability of the three ministers, that's Shane and Chris Bishop, Simeon Brown, to give the tick of approval to kaupapa that could impinge on what we hold dear, i.e. mining on conservation land. You're the Minister for Conservation. How do you sit with it?
Well, first of all, the fast-track consenting legislation is the second step of three to move the regulatory framework forward so we can actually get on and do things and get away from the obstruction economy that's been built up over many years. First step, of course, was to repeal the natural built environment and related legislation. There was about 1,000 pages of gobbledygook. The second stage is the fast track, and the third stage is to look at the RMA and related national policy statements. So there has been a fast track in place before. That was through the COVID arrangements, and of course there were other regulatory frameworks that enabled big projects to get moving, particularly around projects of national significance. One of the experiences I had, Dale, was working for Tainu Group Holdings. We spent 7 years preparing for Ruakura, the big logistics hub down there, and then essentially my observation was that the council used the RMA and other means to block the development from taking place. And it took us 3 years and $3 million plus down in Wellington at a Board of Inquiry to actually get Ruakura instructed by the Board of Inquiry to the Hamilton District, Hamilton City Council, to put it into the district plan. So yes, there are some serious concerns about how the fast track has progressed, but equally, my experience has been that sometimes the RMA, the conservation legislation and other related regulatory frameworks have very much slowed down Māori economic development.
It's an interesting corridor too. What do you think was behind Hamilton City Council's being so stally?
Well, I think that there was certainly at that time a history of Hamilton City having quite contentious positions alongside Tainu Group Holdings, and we went to effectively litigation three times, the Environment Court, the High Court, and then the Board of Inquiry around the aspirations and the Māori economic development aspirations of Tainu, whether or not it was the base and having office space out there, of course the widening of Te Rapa Road, and then finally the mother of all projects, which was Ruakura. So I do think that there were some challenges within the relationship, but the interpretations of the RMA and related legislations were the levers through which Māori economic development was actually stalled. So I think that the experiences that I have aren't based on the ideologies of some who think that because we're changing legislation, all hell is going to break loose. No, not at all. But there are some real aspirations from Māori to get on and do things which would not be easily enabled under the previous legislation. Of course, you have some great examples up in Auckland with the supermarket taking over 20 years to get consented, and other projects like energy projects that might take 8 years to go through a consent and then 2 years to build. So I think within the proposed legislation, the fast track bill, we've now got a platform through which projects can be expedited in a suitable manner. There's also many checks and balances, particularly around treaty settlements, but also other things. And as the Minister of Conservation, There's a pathway through which any project that does have conservation impacts or does require concession, it's still got to go through the Minister of Conservation and the conservation pathway, as well as the project fast track consent pathway.
You've got an unenviable position too, as the Minister of Māori Development. Māori have trust in you to protect what we hold dear. You're seen as something of a watchdog to parliamentary process on our behalf. Or is that skewed because you're actually a minister for the Crown? Whilst you wear the title of Minister for Māori Development, who do you work for?
Well, I don't think I'm in any different position from the last Minister of Māori Development or many before me. It's an absolute privilege to be in this role and to represent the hardworking people of Hamilton West, but also to represent and be a supporter, an ardent supporter of Māori aspirations. So I don't think I'm any different from many, many Māori and others who have actually had the role of Minister of Māori Development, or as it was previously known, the Minister of Māori Affairs. And I do wear the portrait of the corona, or the crown, and I do have responsibilities in the cabinet, but I also have some insights which, over my experience working with different tribes, working with the superannuation fund, working as a lawyer, and particularly outside my professional life, getting things moving on kaupapa such as Tri Māori and the publication of Reo Māori books, attending many wānanga over the years, I do have some insights which are probably atypical, not just for a Minister of the Crown, but actually for many Māori who don't have the fortune or the privilege of being involved in those sorts of projects.
Kia ora. We might have got skewed reports, Tama, and it put us in an unenviable position as well too, because, you know, the media bangs around, next thing you see a headline and then you follow through on that suggestion. Do you feel that you were misquoted when it comes to how you see the role of Māori broadcasting and its future? Initially, the report that came out through one of our most prominent dailies, saying that Māori broadcasting will have to self-fund in time, but that's not quite how you intended the kōrero to be received. That's how it came out across the big daily. And so it sort of sparked a thread of conversation off the back of it. What, in fact, do you see as the future of Māori broadcasting? Can you clarify it briefly for us?
Well, I think that over the years, and certainly leading into the 1970s, 1980s, Māori broadcasting had a very, very, very narrow and thin pathway to be amplified across the New Zealand listenerscape. And we had our mātua, aunties and uncles, who fought for and secured a pathway and some assets and some capacity, and then develop the capability, whether or not that's through Māori radio, places like Radio Ngāti Porou and Tupoko Tika, and then subsequently Wāte and other shops, MyFM, and Māori TV, starting with programs such as Te Karere and Waka Huia, and then we had the Māori Television Network and ended up with Te Reo and Māori TV. And those things were really encouraged ultimately and supported by multiple governments, including national-led governments, which supported and settled some of the treaty claims around broadcasting assets, and of course, just recently the 5G spectrum arrangement, which has been curated over a couple of years, but being finalised by Melissa Lee. So I think when you look at that context, there has been ongoing support for many, many decades around Māori broadcasting. The second thing is that many people have misreported and suggested that I have a position that Māori broadcasting should be self-funding and totally self-funding. And what I want to do just today, Dale, is just to clarify and make sure people understand that our view is Te Reo Māori is a fundamental part of New Zealand's DNA and society, past, present and future. It is a taonga, and that this government will continue to support it in different ways, in many ways, but it won't necessarily be the same as previous governments, whether or not they had a red hue or blue tinge. But what we're very mindful of too is we operate in a very constrained fiscal environment right now. I've been a massive supporter of Te Reo Māori broadcasting and initiatives, and will continue to do so. That doesn't mean that we are going to do everything the same as previous ministers. However, as you know, I'm very driven by Te Reo Māori across many platforms, including the media platform and broadcasting, both radio, TV, and in other platforms. But in the same breath, we know that there is some fiscal constraint, and that's emerged out of what we've seen in the last few years. But I'll continue to be a very strong supporter. I'll continue to be absolutely energetic in promoting Te Reo Māori, both in Parliament and outside Parliament, and Kōrero Māori myself, and also try to be collaborative with people, the broadcasters, people like yourselves and others, to be innovative about the way we can generate finance and generate some funds.